You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. Listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Good morning. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. 573-4-BREAD-4 is our number. You can text, you can call, and you can be anonymous. Obviously, when you text or call, your phone number may show up. We do not keep it. We do not track you. No one tries to sell you anything. You can be anonymous. So no worries. You can email me anytime at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. If you'd rather email, and anything you say can be held completely, well, usually we'll do it anyway, confidential. If you would prefer your particular situation to not be talked about over the air, that's fine. We don't have to do it. If you don't have a problem with that or would like it over the air, which always helps other people, but don't feel bad if you don't want it over the air, then we can do that and change things up a little bit. You can be anonymous there, or you can give your name, whichever you like to do, because it's all about you. It's all about you. Completely. So that's the most important thing. That's why I'm here. That's why I show up. So today is a day of hope. And the only way I know that, I know it is for you, because you are breathing, you're living, you're hearing. You might be feeling great. You might be in despair. You might be irritated. You might be overwhelmed. You may be getting a new project going. You may be making $1 million. It doesn't, maybe driving your car. You may be walking in the park. Maybe I'm talking to you as you're on the treadmill. So keep going. Keep going on that treadmill. I'm kind of missing a treadmill, actually, to be honest with you. But I'm here for you, and I'm here. I mean, when I'm here for you, that helps me also. It's a crazy thing that happens, and you hear it all the time. First heard it. I heard it all my life. Of course, you hear it. It's preached. It's in the church. It's not in the church. It's all over. If you give to someone, then it really does help you. Well, we look at it in this kind of a job-oriented world, a regimented-oriented world, a grade school. I turn in my paper. I get an A. The bell rings. I get to play. You get rewarded at work. You know, it's not like that. It isn't like that. It is a constant, evolving, breathing, living, moving, morphing organism that is constantly transforming, transmutating, transfiguring, trans everything. It's just trans. It's just trans. It transcends everything, because you cannot measure it by tangibles. And that's really important for you to completely get and understand, is that it turns out, like it or not, it's all the above. That you can be gaining something very tangible. You can feel good. Let's say you volunteer somewhere and you think, hey, this is great. And you really like it. And you feel great about it. And you can tangibly say, I feel better. What a bonus. What a bonus. Sometimes, and I know this from experience, where you volunteer and it's like herding cats, and then someone else throws a chair and somebody else punches somebody else or calls you a name or doesn't like you at all. And it can make you feel bad. And it can make you think, oh, I'm just done with this. Why am I doing this? Beating my head against the wall. But you go back. Because that's what life is like. You do that with your own family. Why am I doing this? Beating your head against the wall. So And you just keep going back and you try to help. And if nobody shows up, then you just try something different. And that's how it is in life. But we're going to look through the microscope a little bit today. We're going to talk about putting up your own barriers to things. What happens when you take those barriers down? What is addiction? So don't turn it off if you go, well, I don't have any addictions. I don't do drugs. I don't do porn. I don't do alcohol. I have no addictions. Well, what kind of behavior do you have that causes you, if you really have those moments of introspection, that make your life unmanageable? If you have behaviors that make your life unmanageable, that you continue in, and the more your life goes on, the more you realize you're ill-equipped for one sector of your life. Let's take a look at that, because you might be engaging in addictive behavior at the true sense of the word. We have, over the last 60, 70 years, equated addiction with alcohol first, other medications, drugs, alcohol. Now they've added sex, drugs, alcohol, sex. But if you really look at it, much of the behavior is an addictive behavior that causes people to enter into situations where their lives become unmanageable. Now we are taught and we experience, from desert fathers all the way on up, and before that, Old Testament, and probably any tradition, oral or written, that you can find that talks about the creator, a spiritual reality, an other than you, that has been the plight of all humanity, just in different clothing and different forms, because our world changes. So therefore, our needs change a little bit. And when our needs change, or our abilities to get those needs met change, or our brains are taken up with many different issues, then what we express and what we think and how we look at things changes as well. But if we just step back for a minute, just take one step, take a God's eye view of everything. Right now, close your eyes and you're God. And you can be any old God you want to be. And what I mean by that is you can be the picture in whatever book you ever saw. You can just be a amorphous ether. Doesn't matter. Immediately what comes to my mind is some giant picture I've seen. Actually, to tell you the truth, what's coming to my mind is a picture of an old, I think it was N.C. Wyeth painting of the North Wind. It was this big godlike Michelangelo face man with a big wind coming out of his mouth. He's just blowing this huge wind. Well, I think about that right now as I'm saying that. But if I have that picture of this omnipotent, this huge, this ethereal, timeless, eternal, meaning no past, no beginning, being who, because there is no time, it is all now, everything, creation of the universe, other planets, if there's life on other planets, you, all the ancestors that ever existed, dinosaurs, volcanoes, it's all there. It's all there. And you take a look and you watch and you realize that if you peel away the layers and all the little things, like the little things with wheels, cars and chariots and spaceships and little planes and everything that is so huge to us, and you just kind of look at the creation at the center, the one is made in the image and likeness, it is the continual few things that create an unmanageable situation in life. Whether you go back to the earliest book in Genesis all the way to the last book in the New Testament, you're going to find people dealing with these problems. Not enough love, envy, jealousy, too much need, addiction, power, addiction, money, addiction, control, addiction, need to be first, need to be loved by a parent. Lots of biblical stories about that one. Need to reject every, there's all kinds of things. So not to get too broad or not to get too narrow, but to open up this little picnic basket here with the big label and a bow called addiction. Because if you are, you're there, we have to find, as we've talked about, we've been talking about this whole week, finding this balance between the extremes. There's a balance, there's a truth between identifying with your substance and being 100% recovered. Because what is becoming more and more acknowledged but always known is that when one person, just live with an alcoholic and have them not drink, or let's say they stop drinking, that, excuse me, can't find my mute button. It does not change. We'll get this on the other side of the break. It does not change behaviors. In fact, some behaviors get worse. Then I will get something to drink and I will find my mute button for the other side of the break. So in the meantime, you get your coffee. See you on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, recovered, at least for the moment, from my coughing fit. So we're talking about addiction in a very broad sense of the word. So maybe we could use another word. I just can't think of another word. So if you can think of a better word than 5734BREAD4, and I found out over the break that when you call and speak, there is no way that we even see your number. However, if you do text, we can see your number. But again, you can remain anonymous and we don't do anything with that. So when you call 5734BREAD4, it just shows up that there is a forwarded call from 5734BREAD4, and we really can't even see who you are. So just so that you know that. All right. So in looking at this word, a lot of times there is a problem when we talk about this balance, at least in my own mind, because if you start out and say, hi, I am Joan, and I am an addict, I am an alcoholic, I am a meth addict, I am an abuser, I am a codependent, I am a eating disorder victim, or sufferer, or survivor, I am, and then fill in the blank. You identify with that. Now, in the early days of understanding where you are at, you need to identify with it, because 90% or 99.999% of any kind of addiction is denial. Now, those people who say, you're darn right, I'm addicted and I like it, and I want it, and I'm not stopping this, that's still denial. It is still denial. So you can be fooled. Well, I just like beer, and occasionally I get drunk, some people say. Therefore, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not in denial because I know I have a problem with it. If they state the problem, it's like saying every time you walk up to the mailman, you punch him in the face. Yeah, I got a problem with that. Every time I walk up to the mailman, I punch his face. Well, I just don't like mailmen. I'm not in denial. I know I do it. Well, that's not what we're talking about, because that is denial. But what it's denial of is that you got a big problem that you can't stop. And therefore, going back to AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, the Codependence, Overeaters Anonymous, Eating Disorder Anonymous, Heroin Use Anonymous, Trauma Victim Use Anonymous, any 12-step program 70-some years ago when they made the, probably more 80, those two men came up with the 12 steps, which was really biblically and scripturally based for alcoholics. It was during a time where no one actually admitted you were the town drunk, you could get jailed, though it was a typical scene for the wife to be sometimes beaten up or to go grab him, have the kids grab him from the bar stool at the local saloon. We don't have those anymore. We don't have those situations anymore. You can drink in your own home. You have to go a long ways or be driven to some bar. This is a whole different world now. But these are still applicable. And now we're finding, as we all mature in our understanding, the church included, as we all mature, we understand, now, wow, wait a minute, now that it's not such a shameful thing, and there's not such a stigma about having some kind of addiction, or to realize that we have repetitive behaviors, thoughts, feelings, hurts, habits, that continue to make our life unmanageable, well, we can start looking at deeper threads, different threads, because it stops being those people over there and it begins to be us people here. Now you look at me and you say, well, my life isn't unmanageable. I have a job. My husband's got a job. The kids are in school. They're all really great. I go to the gym. I work out. I'm fine. We eat healthy, all's good. And many of you who say that to me are saying it to me as a psychiatrist. Why? Because your life is unmanageable. Your internal life is unmanageable. You know that pretty soon the plates that you're spinning in the air, one of them's going to crash. And if they do, they're all going to fall down. And you know that. And the more you go on, the more you realize that's going to happen. Because what happens? One of the plates falls. Dad gets sick. Mom gets sick. Find out baby sister has an addiction. Brother is schizophrenic. Your own child has an eating disorder. Your own child is actually covering up needle marks. Your cousin, your child's cousin, your nephew, has a meth lab in the little town 40 miles away that you thought was just fine that your 17-year-old son drives down to see their relatives, because that's a healthy, lovely thing to do. And then you find out something that shakes your world. And then what happens? Or you get left. Or you find out that your husband or wife has been having an emotional affair. What do you do with that? And they have their own issues and their own addictions, their own needs that are making their lives unmanageable, because that ain't manageable. Secret online life is not manageable. Many of you out there, you go to your basements, you go to your garages, you go to your cars, you go to your bathrooms, you go to your own bedrooms, you go to your studies. And you just want to see what people from high school have been doing. and that guy that just ignited your heart back in middle school, talking to a woman yesterday, middle school, flame from middle school, ran across them again in high school. 30 years ago. It might be true love. Finally found them again. Well, your little heart remembers things. You remember what it was like to ride the roller coaster and how fun and great it is. Well, 30 years later, you ride that same roller coaster and you might have a blast, but you might be like going to physical therapy for the next 3 or 4 weeks because you're hurt so much because you aren't the person you were then. But the memory is there. Of course it is. And you get the same hormones and the same. It's not just a stagnant memory like somebody else's picture that you see in at a garage sale. You take a picture of someone you don't know that you find it in an estate sale on a attic floor. You pick it up and you look at it. You think, oh, that's cute. A little boy at a Ferris wheel, 1955. But if you take you at that Ferris wheel in 1955 or 1965 or 75 or 85 or 95 or 2005, and you take that picture of you, oh, your heart gets warm, or it gets scared, depending on what your experience was. Honor you. Honor that you are a unique individual made uniquely, created uniquely in a wonderful, crazy, out of this world, because it is, design of not just random thrown together stuff, but in some system that's designed to keep on going and to keep on creating unique things. It's like a super divine algorithm. This with this will equal this will equal that. And it goes branches and branches and branches and branches. So same parents, all different kids, completely unique. Some similarities, we can cross match blood types, thank God, and bone marrow and all that. But you're uniquely you. So you have your own unique hurts, your own unique habits. And habits, when you can't get out of them and your life is unmanageable, we can look at that almost as addiction. It's just a word that sometimes it gets kind of crazy. But one thing that they're really beginning to recognize, and the more that gets developed, it's still the same 12 steps, but that started with alcoholics, specifically for alcoholics. And Al-Anon was specifically for people who Al-Anon, you know, it's the same Alcoholics Anonymous partners. So it was all about women, usually, who were living with men who were alcoholics. But that was just the tip of the proverbial iceberg. So when we come back from our break, I want to bring this to you and your life, no matter what it is, where you realize that at this moment in time, and how do you realize things are unmanageable? Sometimes because you can't go for 1 second without stimulation and you'll break down and cry, or you feel very depressed, or you're constantly irritable. It could be anything. Maybe the tip-off sign is lack of sleep. Maybe it is one more request and you just sit in your kitchen and cry. Well, we're going to get to filter all these things when we come back from the break. I am your host, Dr. Michelle 573 for Red.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Oh, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can listen to archives, past podcast, anytime by logging on to breadboxmedia.com, scrolling over to Dr. Michelle Live, clicking on that, and there you go. You got your choice. Also, today, tomorrow, still giving away rosaries. So if you want a rosary, email me, dmalive@breadboxmedia.com, or you can text 573-4BREAD-4 and say, I would like a rosary during our live broadcast here. Or you can call 573-4BREAD-4 and just talk to someone there. And that would be fine. I'll send you a rosary from Rugged Rosaries. They are a great place. You also can get a discount. My listeners can get a discount by putting in, if you want to just shop on their website, Rugged Rosaries. I think 2 days ago we had a link to their website, but Rugged Rosaries will probably get you there. And you can get a discount by putting in the code, just the name, no periods, all capital letters, Dr. Michelle, DrMichelle. So DrMichelle, I slurred that, will get you a discount. So, all right, so we're talking about unmanageability. Well, let's talk a little bit about the monks of New Skeet. Now, how do they come into it? The monks of New Skeet have been known to me for a very long time, probably 20, 30 years. They are monks who live in, I think, upper state New York or some northeastern area. And they raise dogs, German Shepherds, I think is what their main dogs that they raise. But they, I've kind of followed them here and there throughout the years. And I happened to, when Mozart came into my life, my German Shepherd, I thought about them again. I hadn't thought about them in 15 years. And I didn't really get their main book, but I thought, oh, this might be fun. This book called Dogs and Devotion, a celebration of the bond between dogs and their people. Well, cool. But I found one really great little, they have a picture of a dog, totally cute, by a fence. And it says, no fences. And what they do is they give you a little dog behavior and then they ask you something about yourself. So this says, dogs don't seem to like fences. The very presence of a barrier often elicits a furry, and they put furry, of protectiveness that otherwise wouldn't be manifest. A dog barking wildly behind a fence one moment can easily turn into a friendly pooch the next. All that is necessary is the dropping of the barrier. Not always, but frequently. Might we not glean a lesson from this? At the very least, the barrier we bark behind can sabotage the depth we seek with those we love. Drop the barrier and a new level of relationship and trust might occur. Well, that underscores perfectly what we're talking about. At the very least, the barrier we bark behind can sabotage the depth that we're looking for, the depth of relationship with those we love, those we are meeting, with ourselves, with our God. Drop the barrier and a new level of relationship and trust must occur. Now, what are barriers? When we're talking about things like those behaviors, habits, hurts, traumas, substances, exercise, control over eating, that we don't even consider a problem, and our bark behind them, those are our barriers, and the bark behind them is the constant way that we put ourselves away from any of those people over there. And those people over there meaning addicts, Well, I'm not an alcoholic. Look at those alcoholics. They smell like urine and they always smell like alcohol and their brains are all fried and their livers are bad and they're dying young and they're awful. That's it. I'm not an alcoholic. Or they're my boss. My boss is an alcoholic. I see him drink all the time. Not my boss. So trust me, I'm not saying my boss is, but you know, you separate yourself. You don't see it for yourself because you found a way to put a barrier up. I know this. I live with someone like that. Someone in my own family. Never thought it twice because didn't fit a picture. Then fast forward a couple decades and I'm in my psychiatry residency and as a doctor, as a physician, we learn all about that, of course. But in psychiatry, it gets a little more specific as you go through and have to do inpatient and detox and 12 steps and all that. And you hear, if you're in the emergency room for any length of time, which you are as a psych resident, or you should be as a psych resident, as I was, you hear stories over and over and over, the same stories all the time, all the time. And the rule of thumb was if someone tells you they drink 6 beers a night, it's probably 12. And that doesn't go across the board, but you hear the same thing. No, I'm not an alcoholic because. And then there's always the reason why they don't fit a picture of the typical picture of an alcoholic, of what we all think they are. They drink at lunch or they drink at work or they sometimes get too drunk or they stumble around or they make a spectacle of themselves or they drink alone at night. All these things. Now, there is a system that we have as a questionnaire that we ask. And it really kind of goes down to behind that barrier. And this is just in the medical world now, or the psychiatric world as well, or the substance addiction world. We go into those things of, well, has anyone ever told you you have a problem? Are any of your family members ever distressed? Have you lost family members from that? Have you lost a marriage because of it? I lost a marriage because of it, not because I was the person who was drinking, but the person I was married to was drinking. I didn't understand anything, but I lost a marriage to that. There's no way that you can't stop that runaway train if that runaway train is so far ahead and so determined to keep on going on those tracks. So have you lost a marriage because of that? Either you being the person who did not drink or the person who did drink. Have you ever lost a job? And a lot of people can say, well, no, I never had, none of that stuff ever happened. And now we're only talking about alcohol. What about drugs? What about prescribed drugs? I know a woman right now, very young, beautiful, sweet, wonderful, shy, a little overweight. And I mean that, I mean, not in a pejorative way, but I mean, yes. But just this, she would just look like someone that you would just love to know, you know, just seems really good with herself. Had an accident, had some pain medication, and pretty soon became a little bit too dependent on that pain medication and started neglecting herself a bit, her world a little bit. Then pretty soon she started to get emotional that she didn't understand the emotionals were coming from the constant use of the depressant and the change in her body. And then she became not so much so good of a parent. And then it caused her down the road a few years to lose her child. For a time. Well, now she's getting clean. Now she's coming back and now it's going to be good, but it's a hard road for everybody. Now, I said I wouldn't talk so much about these alcohol, drugs, etc., because here's the reality. Straight from the book of Narcotics Anonymous, which is basically taken from, it is the 12 steps. It is the template is Alcoholics Anonymous. And they tell you that in the beginning, all the anonymous should be a faithful, even the Christian based anonymous groups should be faithfully adhere to those steps. And you don't leave any out just because you don't like the way they sound. They should all be there because they all work and they really do. Over a million people at last count, and this is anonymous now, right? So you're not going to get a lot, have been in, quote, recovery, unquote, in the last decade from alcohol alone. So by using these groups, it's a very, they really do work, but we have to then understand the definition of work. But one thing straight from the, it's called, I think it's called the Flat Book, I'm not sure, but of Narcotics Anonymous, when they talk about step one, they say, before you go to the admitting that your life is powerless, they talk about having, if you've been clean for a while, or you're not partaking in those eating disorder things, it's about the powerlessness that you have over other behaviors that make your life unmanageable, and that you need to find a way to stop the behavior so that the surrender that you have to the understanding that you really are powerless over so many things in your life, almost everything really, that it isn't clouded by, quote, continued acting out. So we're going to dissect that a little bit more on the other side of the break. But basically it says you can have been clean, sober, not doing an eating disorder, not partaking in prescription drugs, not having online sex or emotional affairs for many, many years. But have you gotten to the core? So let's talk about the core on the other side of the break, and how we work through that. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. Welcome back. I hope you have your coffee, have a little time to sit back and relax and think about some things. So let's talk about what's mood altering, what's mind altering. Sometimes we end up in these situations. I won't say end up. We live. We keep transforming our situations to work more and more around that hurt, that habit, that behavior that gets some people into trouble, but may not have gotten you into trouble. In other words, you may not have gone the route of a substance. But as I read from the Monks of New Skete, the question becomes, what is the barrier behind which you bark? Bark out your denial. Bark out, no, everything's fine. Bark out, no, I can handle this. Bark out, no, I used to have an eating disorder, but I don't have one now. Bark out, well, I used to be critical. I used to be this. I used to be that, but I'm not now. Because you're running as fast as you can. And if you stop for 1 second, you cry. Or you stop for 1 second, you get agitated and angry. And so you never stop. And you look normal to the world. You're always running up and down your stairs, or you're always busy doing something. Always, it's good to be busy. Yes, it is good to be busy. I talked earlier about serving people. It is good to serve. It really is good to serve and volunteer, because it will transform you. And for a little while, you're out of your own needs. And even if you start for the wrong reasons. And what do I mean by the wrong reasons? Well, sometimes it's self-serving. Sometimes you just want to look good. People want to look good, so they do it. But after a while, if you're listening, if you're a seeker, which you are, or you wouldn't be listening, after a while, you will get transformed, but you have to open yourself up, take away a few of your own internal barriers. Now, let me give a real quick thought to you about one of the quickest ways to dismiss any kind of bad behavior. probably not what you're going to think. It's humor. One of the quickest ways to dismiss you finding truth about your own self is humor, sarcastic humor. When you look at, I remember when we first talked about sexual addiction, and the very first person that talked to me about sexual addiction as a psychiatrist was actually a family member. And the whole family, they didn't talk to me as a psychiatrist, talk to me as a family member, but because I was a psychiatrist, they sought my opinion. And at that point, I didn't even know that much about it. And I even doubted it existed. And the rest of the family was kind of like, oh yeah, right. It's not that. It's not that. Well, it was that. But we didn't know. But when I wasn't in the peer group of the family member, but more the peers were kind of like, oh yeah, right. They're kind of laughing and joking about it and whatever. Then it got normalized. It got watered down. It's easy to dismiss. Now, what happens if you're just you and you're looking at a stand-up comic or you're looking at a sitcom, you're looking at a movie, and there's a gentle, sweet, not an indictive or acerbic, but joke about whatever the situation could be, whether it's a little wink, wink, nod, nod, you're included. Because where are you included the most in life when you get an inside joke? If you're privileged, then you're the privileged insider, the inside joke. There is no quicker way to get inside a group than to get their joke, right? When you're in junior high, when you're in high school, that kind of separates you. When the joke's on you, you're the outsider. But if you're part of the quote joke, unquote, the humor, we know, wink, wink, we know. It's that way all the time. It's that way in any group, because it is a barrier that us and them. So if you start laughing, and then what happens also, just think about when you're in junior high or earlier than that, and then high school, college, that kind of thing. If you have a friend or a loved one or somebody you love, a grandmother, whatever, and they're telling a joke and it's not funny, but you laugh because because that's your connection with them, because you're supporting them, because you're letting them know, oh, you're sweet, I love you, this is great. But you laugh. So you laugh also, you laugh not to be rejected. You all know it. You adults completely fine, no obvious addictions, problems, families. You have your groups you belong to. They're great. And you go out and you're philanthropic. But you're always told, right from the pulpit even, the question comes up, well, hey, do you laugh at that little off-color joke, either the racist joke or the sexist joke or the dirty joke? Do you laugh at that? Because if you do, you're supporting it. Well, there's a truth to that. Because part of that is you don't want to be not part of the group. And so everybody kind of, laughs if that's what they do. It's the rare one who goes, I'm just, I don't do that. Or walks away or doesn't necessarily create a scene or maybe even challenges them. That's uncool. That's just uncool. That's a hard thing to do. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about how you can be usurped by humor, how humor can keep you in the state of denial. Because you're just part of that big old group. And then there's nothing so wrong with the part of the group that you're in. And if you think there is, and you're out of the group. So either you do the laughing or you do the joking, but there's the barrier there. So take it seriously. If you laugh, you're part with the group, you're part of the inside joke, and then you're accepted. If you don't get it, then you're either stupid, you're uncool, but you're certainly not part of the group. And if you don't laugh, then you're rejecting the person who's telling you the humor, who's enlisting you in their own private world. I've heard so many different people who are true, frank, alcoholics, and or drug addicts who will use humor to dismiss what they are doing. I don't need to go to the meetings. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm a drunk. Ha, 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 ha. I just like the taste of beer. I just like the taste of this. I just like the taste of that. One drink won't bother me. Well, one drink won't bother a lot of people. I heard the other day, Jesus drank wine. Jesus turned water into wine. Wine's not a bad thing. But yes, if you're smelling like urine, you live in a gutter, and you are 45 years old, and you have the liver of someone who's 90 and drank, because a lot of 90-year-olds don't have bad livers. There's something wrong with that, and I really, really would be hard-pressed for you to show me where in the world that's in the Bible. But see, I'm talking to you this way. But when you talk to someone who's way in the addiction, you can't, it's impossible. It's something they have to come up with themselves. But you have to come up with yourself in your non-substance addiction world, or if you are addicted to a substance. But this is all part of how the whole concepts here is about admitting. This is just step one of a 12-step. But admitting, this is the step, I'll read it to you as it's printed for all the anonymous groups. We admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. So we admitted that we were powerless over that which we compulsively do and can't stop. Are you compulsively a people pleaser? Are you compulsively, you just cannot say no? Are you so afraid of rejection that you will put up with anything? You will put up with control. You will put up with mental abuse and verbal abuse because you are so, so, quote, addicted, unquote, to having someone control over you. You have no identity outside of that. You wouldn't know what to do unless someone instructed you on how to do it. Or are you so addicted to control? They will constantly seek out boyfriends or girlfriends that you could easily control. It's a whole, I mean, people do it all the time. A woman told me that the other day. Oh no, I like this. I want the singled out a person, pointed out who it was. This is the man I want. And I very frankly said, because I know this person, this is not going to work. There's no match here. No, I know that, but I need to be in control. Okay, so does that make life unmanageable? Because you can see you have to think it through to the end. What's going to happen? Well, we've run out of time today because I didn't think that part through to the end. Yes, I did actually. So I am Dr. Michelle. And listen, I will give you a rosary. DM live at breadboxmedia.com from Rugged Rosaries. They are, I guarantee you, they are so unusual. They're great. I want you to think about this. Think about where in your life or your psyche, your mind, your way, your being has become a little unmanageable, or that you know that if one more plate comes into you, your spinning plates, they're all going to fall. Think about that. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. You can email me questions, thoughts, or concerns at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. I am Dr. Michelle. Thank you for walking with me today.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.